Hey, this is Colin Stevens, author of Make Your Mark. And the best advice that I ever got was to bet on yourself.
Ooh, bet on yourself. That's big bet advice, man. So who gave you that? When did you get that? Where were you in life or work or whatever?
Well, honestly, it's a theme that really I feel like has come through parts of my life. And really, I believe it started with my dad. You see this jersey in the background. This is my dad's jersey at Louisville. And he's inducted to the Louisville NFL Hall of Fame. And he also played for the New Orleans Saints and the Baltimore Colts. And I believe that my dad achieved some really cool things in life and was always like, Colin, go do for yourself. Go bet on yourself, man. Like, take some risks. Try to make something happen. And because of that, I believe I've been able to have some pretty cool achievements in my own life. And so it started with my dad, but even as recently as one of the coaches who I am proud to have learned under and played for, Chris Beard, he texted me that just a couple of months ago and was just like, Colin, dial in and bet on yourself. And so that's been real powerful for me.
I love that, man. I love that. Well, let's talk about your dad, because I read the story, right? Howard Melvin Stevens, your dad.
Yes.
I love that he played in the NFL, but you know what I really love? The pool hall. Because my dad is a pool player. Do you know who Willie Munson is? Have you heard the name Willie Munson?
I haven't.
So that's okay. Willie Munson is the best black pool player of all time. He's in the Hall of Fame in Wisconsin. He passed away not too long ago, but he's a friend of my buddy Will Nelson. And yeah, Willie was a great man. So do you play pool, Colin?
I mean, I can find my way through a billiard table, but I'm not putting any money on the table, Phil.
Well, that's because you're not a hustler when it comes to pool. True. You're a hustler as it relates to life. So with that, I just got to ask, do you like nine ball, straight in, last pocket? What do you play?
Oh, yes, Phil. I don't really even know what you're talking about. So yeah.
Oh, good. That's funny. Yeah.
So we're not playing. Just so we're clear, Phil, we're not playing pool. I mean,
We'll play. We just won't play for money. I'm not that good either. My dad is the best, man. I just went back for my birthday, and dad whipped my ass, man. It wasn't even pretty. Like, he's really good, dude. We looked. He's got 14 trophies in the basement, all lined up, all shined up. Like, there's dust everywhere except for dad's trophies, which I love. So that's pretty cool, man.
That's awesome.
I love that. Yeah, so I love that your dad said bet on yourself. I love that your dad plays pool, and I love that your dad played in the NFL. So that's pretty cool. So something he said, though, really stuck with me that you wrote in the book, and that is, if there's not something of value on the line, then you're not really living. You're just waiting to die. So tell me more about what that means and how we can fully live so that we can make our mark.
Yeah, I think there's just so many avenues of our lives that we go down that we are told to take this safe and the sure route, right? The one that's going to guarantee you success. And the reality is that nothing is guaranteed. Whether you take the route that your parents say you ought to take, or the university say you ought to take, or the church says you ought to take, there are no guarantees. And so I think within that quote, it's like, man, living life means that we will take risks. You know, to put yourself in a position of trying out for a team or going for that job or asking that girl on a date, like, it puts some risk in your life to be rejected or to lose, or, you know. And I think we have such a generation coming up that just doesn't want to fail. And man, failure is a part of success. Like, so I think so much I've learned from my dad in that regard of just like, man, go out and get after something. If you lose or you get, or something happens, man, it's part of living. And my dad is 73 now, and he is the most boisterous guy that you'll ever meet. Just loves life, and it's no wonder that he's been able to do some of the things that he's done. And but we got to get after it, or else we're just we're just floating by life, and then we're just like, well, then what's this about?
Yeah. Right on, man. So where is Dad? Where is he?
Dad is, I'm actually at my parents' house now.
Oh, shut up. Come on now. Where is that? Serious. Don't not it, the address,
but Raleigh, North Carolina.
Raleigh. Very nice. Very cool. Cool. Well, I'd love to meet your dad, dude. One of these days we'll bring him on the show. Or maybe we'll bring him on your show and we'll interview him together, right?
I think that's a plan right there, brother.
There you go. That'd be fun. So with that, let's talk a little bit more about the book. First, congratulations. Thank you. Enjoyed the book. So lots of good stuff, your second book. So congratulations with that. So one of the other things you say in the book here is really interesting. You said patience and grace with yourself means that you have patience and grace for others. And I will tell you, Colin, I don't have a lot of patience for myself. I'm like you, man. I'm a charging kind of guy. I'm moving forward and I'm working on that. That's something that I'm really working on and it's very hard. So would you say that you're a work in progress, or where did you learn that one, man? The patience and grace thing.
Yeah, I think more so than anything, you know, I am a very proud husband and father. And I noticed that when I didn't treat my wife well or my kids well, that it had less to do with them than it had to do with me. And so when I talk about patience and grace, I started to realize the patterns in my life were, if I was kicking the shit out of myself in my head for the mistakes that I had made in business or in, you know, whatever had gone on throughout the day, if I was acting like that towards myself, then I would bring that home. And then I would also act like that towards the people who I care most about. And so for me to start to realize, man, like I need to first give myself the patience and grace that I need so I can then give it to the people that I care so much about. Okay, so this is an inside job. Like for me to live an extraordinary life of fulfillment and impact, this is an inside job. I got to start here so that the people that I influence, I can care about in a way that they will remember the most. And so that's where it comes from. Patterns in my life, realizing like, hey, when I feel like I'm falling short with other people or not giving them what they need because I'm lacking it myself.
Yeah. Wow. So how do we do that, Colin? How do we give ourselves more patience and grace? Because I'm struggling, man. I'm not good at that. So give me some tips here.
Yeah.
And more patient and graceful.
Yeah. And it's hard when you've got some ambition, when you want to make things happen, you know, when you've got a motor and you keep moving and you're doing stuff, you're kind of, you're analyzing everything you're doing, not wanting to make mistakes. But in reality, mistakes are a part of our life. You and I both love sports. You know, there's not a fantastic sports game that is without its mistakes. And in fact, you know, the thing I love about sports is that it teaches you so much. The better that you handle mistakes, the better you're ready for the next play. Right. And for me and in basketball, the next play happens so quickly that if you're not ready for it, you're going to make another mistake, and then you're going to make another mistake. And then it's this snowball of mistakes. And then all of a sudden you're like, man, maybe I'm not that good at this game. So when we apply that to life, and we start thinking like, oh, wait, mistakes are a part of life. Even the way that I mistreated my son or daughter, that's a mistake. That doesn't mean I'm a failure. I need to respond to that mistake in a way where I can recover, right? And when it comes to business, the mistakes that I've made in business, to learn from it and put on this, honestly, to me, it's now I'm 41 years old. So it's this place of wisdom that I believe I've grown to understand that mistakes are a part of life, and they're more to be embraced than they are to be avoided. Because if we're avoiding mistakes, we go back to that thing that I was talking about earlier, then we don't want to fail. We don't want to, you know, proceed. We get really hard on ourselves, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, you say in the book, when you avoid the truth, you can't take action to change it. And I think that's so right on, man. If you're running away, or you're like, no, that really wasn't a mistake, well, now you're not going to be able to fix it. So I think that's powerful, man. I think that's really, really good. Really good insight.
Yeah. I want to stay on that truth piece, Phil, because this is why I wrote the book. For much of my life, I didn't realize that I spent much of my life trying to make other people happy. I didn't realize that I was not willing to own my beliefs and own the truth that I was, you know, whether it was my religious beliefs, my beliefs about people, my belief in myself and what I could accomplish. And that was a truth to me that I was, if I really, really grasped it, I might disappoint some people. If I really led my life with the beliefs that I had, I might be ostracized or outcast from a particular group that I had come to know so well. And so this book came on the precipice of me being sick a few years ago, and looking in the mirror and being like, man, like if this sickness took me out, would I be proud of the life that I lived?
Mm.
Would I be proud of my impact and the legacy? Like, am I holding back? And I was like, holy moly, like, no. Like, I wouldn't be proud. I'd be proud of some of the accomplishments, and I'd be proud of my kids and like some of my life. But really, was I living in a way that I was like, nope, this is what I believe in. This is how I'm charging forward. And this is how I'm going to love people. Like, no, I've been holding back. And so this book was pretty much like, hey, this is my flag in the ground. And I want to encourage other people to take on the risk of offending other people, of disappointing other people, in order to be the best version of who we are. And I think that was certainly hard for me to do. I think it's a challenge for all of us who are relational and connected, but I was so good at avoiding the truth, Phil, that I got into a place where I didn't really know what I was about, what my purpose was.
Mm. Wow, man. That's very prescient that you would figure that out and think about that and then make a change. That's powerful, man. So let's dive into that. One of the biggest changes that you made is in the book. And it was a twist that I was not expecting. You talked about leaving the church. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal, man. There's such an in group and such an out group when you think about the church. I will tell you that, you know, I grew up Catholic. I know you grew up Lutheran reading the book. And then, you know, these evangelical churches, you know, I got involved in one. And then I just, not the one that I was involved in, but just in general, I saw they were turning into machines. And I read your book and I'm like, oh, man. Like, I could have written this story, not exactly the same, obviously, but so I did that. So talk about that, Colin. So you left the church. What was the, if there was a tipping point, like what led up to that? What was a tipping point? And then how did you, I guess, work through that?
Yeah. So I grew up in the Christian church, and I was kind of a leader in my classes, in the things that I would, you know, I led Bible studies in high school. I would go on to start and lead Bible studies in college. And I always felt like I had this deep connection to God and Jesus. And, but I still had questions. Like even when I was in high school, I remember I actually went to, different churches. I went to Catholic churches. I went to Lutheran churches, non-denominational churches. I went to the Church of Latter-day Saints, so Mormon. I went and I studied for myself because I wanted to know. I didn't want to just take what people were giving me as though that was the absolute truth. And I remember I did a paper on it, and it came down to like, and then, you know, what about Muslims or Buddhists or you know, people who have different beliefs altogether. And I was like, you know, there's this quote in the Bible where it's, you know, God is love. And those who know God know love. And I'm like, you know what? I've seen a lot of people who are not of the same religion as me be full of love. So it was this contradiction in my mind. How can they be disconnected from God if they are full of love, and the way that they live and treat people is a very honorable way of doing that? How can I be like, oh, you gotta change what you're doing because I know the only right way? And so I felt like I was in this position that I should not be in because somebody else was living a life of love and I'm trying to change it. And in fact, I've been commanded to change it by my institution because they're living inappropriately. So I had those questions in high school. As I go through college and I, you know, stay within the church, and then I, you know, always kind of been a leader. So as I get older, now I have kids and my wife, and we're in the church, and they asked me to be a deacon. I told them, I don't think that you want me to be, because I'm not just going to sit back. And I don't totally agree with everything, you know. Anyhow, I wound up doing it because I would also speak sometimes. I would give some sermons and that kind of stuff. So I felt almost obliged to be a part of leadership. And then when I got to be a deacon, there was a lot of confirmation as I got to see behind the curtain that the Western civilized church is a machine. It is a business. It is not what drives people to becoming like Jesus. When I look at the life of Jesus that I've read about for 30 years of my life, and I look at the way that we live in America and the people in the church, like, these are two very different lifestyles, very different. And not being that Jesus is poor and everybody in America is rich. No, the way that Jesus lived was very contradictory to what was being preached on Sundays. And so I was like, you know what? It's time. I just need to disconnect so that I can stand on my beliefs, so that I can be who I am, what resonates with me, and knowing, like, this does not disconnect me to God, from God. Like, just because I am not going to church on Sunday doesn't mean that I'm disconnected from God. And owning that and then rocking with it. My kids went to a Christian school. I was the head basketball varsity coach at a Christian school for 6 years. Like, I was all the way in, man. And while I still love plenty of those people, it is the institution that I have a problem with, that I don't agree with, not the people. And so that's the short version of how I decided to move on and start to really actually develop my own belief system towards God and my connection to Him.
Cool. Well, thank you for sharing that. So I've experienced a lot of the same.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll talk about that more offline, but that's really interesting, man. So with that, I've got a couple more questions, but first I want to ask you, so what does it mean to you to really make your mark? Mm. Like, that's the title of your book, Colin. Mm. So what does it really mean to make your mark?
You know, to me, it's to connect with who you are, appreciate who you are, the gifts that you have as a human, and then allow that to influence the people that you're connected with. You see, I don't believe that all of us are going to be these massive leaders where we lead either companies or states or organizations, but all of us have an impact. That's the beauty of being human. We all have an impact somehow, one way or another, on people that we are connected with. And I think, honestly, the most hurting people in our world are the ones who are disconnected from people. And so to make your mark, to me, means that we allow the best parts of us to come through and influence other people. And when we don't have the best parts of us, we actually allow other people to see them, so they see our humanity which allows us to be connected to them, which is allows us to make a greater impact.
I love that. So good. Such a good answer. So thank you. So before I ask you kind of the last two here, I just want to encourage folks, if you're loving this and you're loving what Colin's got to say, I encourage you, get a copy of Make Your Mark. Go to The Colin Stevens. It's one L, C-O-L-I-N. Stevens is with a V. TheColinStevens.com. Easy read. Great stuff. Lots of insight in there. So check that out and do that. So Colin, I got just a couple more questions here, bud. So why write another book when you could just give speeches, right? Yeah. This is your second book. You self-published it like you did your first one. So why do you feel that a book is one of the best formats for your message?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy reading books. I think it's a great way for us to, because we get to interpret it however we want. You think about it, you go to a speech and you sit there and you may be impacted in a great way and you take your notes, and then I don't know how, I mean, there's not been a lot of times that I really go back to the notes that I took. You know, certainly if it's a powerful person, I keep those, and shoot, I almost tattoo those on my heart, you know, like, but when it comes to a book, you can make your notes. You have a physical copy, or if you have a Kindle or an audiobook, you know how you can go back through it. And one of the reasons that I wrote the book, because it was for me, it was a, like I said, a flag in the ground earlier, but it was also a place, this was a courageous act for me. Phil, to be honest, it was a courageous act for me to put my face on the front of the book, because I've been told my whole life, like, don't shine too bright. That's not humble enough. Don't be, you know, make sure you're modest. Don't do too big of an ordeal, right? Don't try to outshine God, if you will. So that was much of what I heard. And even with what I was in institutionally, that it was like, you know what? I need to be able to put this particular copy out of what I believe, so that I allow myself to be disliked by people. So it was not only was it a flag in the ground, it was also this piece of courage that was like, okay, no, I need people to just not disagree with what I say, but I need people to be like, hey, I need to be okay with people not liking me. And so there was a part of that I believe the best parts of us come from the most courageous actions that we take. That we are most proud of ourselves when we live in courage, not when we don't fear, like fear is coming our way, but when we experience fear and then we are still willing to act in courage, I believe that's when we're most proud of ourselves and the best parts of us show up in life. And so for me, this was an act of courage of, hey, I'm writing this book. I can't tell you how many times, Phil, I wrote something out and I was like, holy shit, people are gonna not like that. And then so my pattern was to delete, delete, delete. But then like this new part of me is, no, let them not like me. Let's finish this out. Let's finish out this paragraph and let's be honest in who I am, right? And so that is the piece of why I write the book. The book is confirmation that I'm taking courage in these steps and really hopefully that other people will also decide to take those steps, right? Because I think the thing that gets missed on leadership in our world is that leadership is glorified. It's the person out in front. It's the person who makes all the good decisions. And to me, leadership is much more of, like I talk about in the book, Braveheart is my favorite movie. Man, there's not a battle in that movie that William Wallace is not right in the thick of. And I think we do such a job, like CEOs, you think about CEOs in our country and how elevated they are and how disconnected in terms of, like, you know, the CEO is making $32 million a year, but they can't figure out a way how to pay their people a good enough wage to survive, right? They got to get a second job. And I'm just like, it, you know, and I am a CEO of a company that I've created. I want to be in the thick of it. Sure. Certainly I want to be a leader and be ahead and make as much money as I can, you know, in a right way. But man, I want to be in the thick of it with somebody. So my point in the book too was like, hey, I want you to be able to see my struggles. I've done some pretty cool things in life, but don't elevate me as though I am, you know, without my struggles. So I talk about Michael Jordan and Sarah Blakely and Martin Luther King and Walt Disney. Like, hold on, we've seen them at this level where we're all inspired by who they are, but dang, they went through the same shit that I went through. Or the same thing that I wanted to go through, but maybe I didn't have the courage to go through. You know, all of those people were willing to be disliked to become the best that they could be in their craft. If we're not willing to be disliked, then you know what? We haven't gotten to the threshold where we can be elevated to where we're really proud of what we've done.
Wow. That's powerful, man. So, well, take us home here, Colin. How do we get started making our mark, right? Because the first step is often the hardest. So give me a first step, whether it's in the book or not. The book is fantastic. Give me a first step so that folks that are listening to this can say, you know what? I'm going to make my mark, and I'm going to start today.
First step, I would say, is to look at the parts of pain in your life. I think there's typically two ways that we make changes. One, we are so unbelievably compelled by somebody that inspires us to say, you know what, I'm going to make a change. The other comes on the side of pain, of where something gets so challenging and difficult and painful that we are compelled to make a change in that regard. And so I think if we will look at the points of pain in our life and then dig and then try to get to the root of the points of those pain, of the points of that pain, then we can understand where that pain derives from and the changes that we need to make in order not to continue to experience it. I think so many of us are living lives on autopilot that we don't really live with intentionality and mindfulness of where we want to go and what we want to do and how we want to behave. It's like we're just going and getting through. And so much of, we'll go back to my psychology degree here, like so much of what we're doing is based upon patterns that we developed when we were younger, just to get us through life or to keep us safe or to, you know, not get shit on by whatever authority that we, you know, that was razzing us. And so we develop these habits. And if we don't look back and then create our own habits, we're just going to be on autopilot. And then we might look up when you're 40 years old and say, oh, no, where am I? Right. And so I think if to start somewhere, to look at the points of pain, and then also what the advice that I got, bet on yourself. Like if you're wanting to do something in life, take the risk. And once you take the risk, you realize it's actually the scariest part is the fear, not actually going through it. The scariest part is the fear of not, you know, failure, but not like when you take that risk and you get in the hunt and you get in the journey, man, there's nothing better.
Awesome. Great way to end, my friend. Get a copy, friends, of Make Your Mark. Go to thecolinstevens.com. And I'm going to close with a quote that Colin mentioned in his book. It says, your heart is free. Have the courage to follow it. So friends, if you're listening to this, get some courage. Just for a little bit. Have the courage to follow what's in your heart. Thanks, Colin. This was great, man.
Enjoyed it, brother.
Me too.